All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this week's Action for Everyone for this here February 11th, 2024. It is Super Bowl Sunday. I don't know. I guess I'm not supposed to say that, but we're not monetized, so fuck it. It's Super Bowl Sunday. We are here trying to get a recording off before the Super Bowl so you guys can listen to us during the halftime show if you don't want to listen to Usher. And I am, as always, your host, Mike Scott. I am joined, as always, by Vice Victus. Vice, how are you today?
Oh man, got the wings ready. Got them defrosted. Got the sauces. I'm not even gonna watch the game. Just gonna eat wings. That's what today means for me. Wing day. Anyway, I'm doing good.
For most people, it's all about the commercials. For me, it's all about the food. This is like my second Thanksgiving. This is a day of gluttony for me. Liam couldn't be here. He had some family stuff. You know what? He spent 3 months in Indonesia shooting a movie. His family gets to come first. It's fine. So we have our unofficial backup co-host, Brandon Streisnig. Brandon, how are you today, B?
Oh, I'm great. I'm really happy to be here. Always nice to be come in for the recast, take over in, you know, mid-season.
You're our legacy. You're our legacy co-host. Our co-host reloaded, if you will. So we have a very special guest today. If you guys have followed us on Twitter at all, you know that there is a series that we are big fans of. And in particular, the 10th entry in the series that came out last year, which was Sniper Grit. We have Brandon Beckett, Alex Keller, Chad Michael Collins. How are you today, buddy?
Hey, good morning, all. How are we doing?
We are amazing, my friend. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us. You are somebody that people are going to be very excited to listen to. And we're hitting a couple of demographics here because we got all the direct-to-video action fans, but we're also getting all the we're getting the Modern Warfare fans in here. We're going to get that Call of Duty bump with this one. So
there's a couple of each out there. So hopefully it finds its way to them.
So Chad, we always like to kind of start off with our guests' origin stories. How, you know, you came up as I told you off mic, a lot of our guests are stunt people, martial artists, come up through that aspect. You came up as more of a straight up actor and then kind of have gone into action roles. So when did you first start realizing acting was something you wanted to do?
Yeah, before both of those things, I came up working as a publicist's assistant here in L.A., entertainment publicist. I did an internship in college and turned it into an assistant position. I got my butt out here in L.A. permanently at the ripe young age of 21 years old, and just kind of worked in the industry. We worked with a lot of TV and film actors, Scott Bakula, and, you know, Gladys Knight was performing at the Flamingo in Vegas. So we had represented all sorts of talent across the board, which of course introduced me to the industry at large. I'd never acted a day in my life growing up. I grew up in a very small town in upstate New York, and, you know, football, basketball, baseball, and the steady all-American diet of sports and everything like that. Never theater, never drama club, never really crossed my mind. And it wasn't until I was a few years into LA that, having met enough people in the industry, a lot of people just planted the seeds and were curious. You ever taken an acting class? Did you come out here to be that? And they were kind of shocked that I said no, because everyone is a multi-hyphenate out in this town. And so I did. I did it on a lark. I just, you know, I said, well, I'll try this on for size. I'm a big fan. I grew up, obviously, with the original Sniper movie and action films. And I was really into Band of Brothers and all the other things that were airing, you know, back in the day. And so I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. And I really liked it. But, you know, I was kind of spoken for. I had a day job, so I treated it more as a hobby. And just kind of took my time with it and, you know, was lucky enough to book some jobs when I was brave enough to audition and, you know, run that whole rat race. And one thing led to another. And yeah, here we are. You know, I never had any formal martial arts training or anything like that, but I was just trying to, you know, learn more as an actor and add to those skill sets. And then I just always kept in shape. I'm very active and, you know, I love to mess around with boxing and kickboxing and stuff like that. So luckily, I kind of brought a minor skill set of that stuff to the table and just kind of fell into the acting genre when I was lucky enough to be thrown into the mix for Sniper Reloaded, which was the reboot of the Sony Sniper franchise that they got back off the ground, playing Tom Berenger's character's son.
Yeah, you actually, so kind of just looking over your acting roles, it kind of looks like 2010, 2011 was really when you sort of break. I mean, you're doing TV work and you get like a murderer's row of TV that season. You're on an episode of CSI, you're on an episode of NCIS, you're on an episode of CSI Miami. And then that's also the same time you get reloaded. So it was, do you kind of consider that like your first big year in terms of acting?
Yeah, you're pretty much on point. At that point, you know, I'd just been on and off, and you know, if you do the IMDb thing and whatever else, you see kind of a fun pattern. I did a couple of non-union movies just to kind of get my feet wet and figure out what the heck I was doing. I got into the union eventually, you know, landed a couple of Hallmark gigs, which was really, really cool. I was fortunate enough to play a lead in Lake Placid 2, a Sci-Fi Channel creature feature with John Schneider and Cloris Leachman and everyone. And that kind of led to the producers of that, the co-production, coming back around to me and wanting to do a bit of an origin story with Sniper, into where I would play young Behringer in Vietnam. And so we'd been talking about that on and off for years. That project got shelved. They reinvented that around the 2010 year and said that, you know, we'll have you be his estranged son. And that opportunity went my way, and we went to South Africa to film it. And that's kind of when I really did have an epiphany moment and switch gears. And I said, look, I could rot away at a desk all day long. I don't think desks are going anywhere, but I've certainly put in my years. Let me see this acting through all the way, because I know it'd be a lifelong regret if I didn't just see where this took me. So I kind of did a balance for the next 5 to 7 years, really just trying to stuff as many resumes and jobs and onset experiences on you know, on my resume, and really just turn the corner full time. And eventually I did that, you know, while I was also balancing the full time work, you know, doing the publicity thing in the office. So here we are. We're doing enough every single year to keep it going, and I couldn't be happier.
So I have to ask, you know, you have we here, you know, when I use the term DTV or VOD, the entire purpose of this show is to highlight DTV and VOD action, because we actually think that that's where the cutting edge action happens. That's where the guys that we love, the Scott Adkinses, the Marcos Arroyos, the people like that, you know, that's where they came up. So we don't ever, you know, use that as a pejorative in any way. So you're kind of part of this wave of mid to 2000s sort of DTV legacy sequels, but it's also, unlike a lot of those, it's straight up still in continuity with the first three movies. So what was it like kind of having to fill the, did you have any weirdness about having to like fill Tom Berenger's shoes essentially?
Man, I think it would have been a lot harder to do that as an actor if it was an origin story, you know, like they had originally kind of envisioned and played around with. But be able to originate your own character, I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off. You know, you can kind of pay homage and tribute to, you know, the other actors and the storylines and the characters that were established before you. But, you know, you're given a little bit of runway to kind of breathe your own life into these characters. And so, look, I didn't really feel any pressure. And I knew Sony was kind of coming at it as, you know, this project, this franchise has been shelved for like 8 to 10 years. And so they just kind of threw it out there, I think, as a big experiment just to see how people responded. And, you know, lucky for us, they responded really well and continued to do it, you know, across 7 or 8 more movies to this day. So it was fun. I didn't really feel any pressure, you know, other than to just do the best job that I could and kind of carry that lead role as best as I could. And, you know, it was fun and it was great. And, you know, I did enough, I suppose, that they kept bringing me back, which is been a real blessing for me. I didn't fumble the ball, to use the Super Bowl reference today. and you know, we're still rocking and rolling to this day.
Well, here, because you had that that actual working background with the kind of the production side of things, or at least the behind the scenes side of things, I was wondering, you know, the series, there's as many Sniper movies now as there are Fast and Furious films. You know, it's like a pretty great accomplishment by any measure. So as the series went on, you know, the character becomes, you know, essential, of course, but the story and it kind of is like what's like a similar to like the Fast film or any of these long running like major franchises. There's lore, there's arcs to it, and I was wondering, did you have any like direct input into that, like script wise or on a idea level, or did it kind of like hold you back every time? Like, because after imagine that after so long, you know, this is your character, like you, this is your Chandler Collins character, not just some dude. But like, so did you have any like input as it went along, as kind of gained steam over the years?
That's a good question. It's funny you say that because I always make the joke that, you know, we're neck and neck with Fast and the Furious. And you know, we could do another 30 sniper movies and never have the budget of one of their movies. So we don't need it. We're doing all right. But in terms of, you know, the sniper stuff and whatever, when I started out this adventure, you know, I was still very much learning as an actor and just taking every opportunity as it came to add as much to my repertoire and to just get better and have more experiences, you know, working with Behringer and Billy Zane and Dennis Haysbert throughout the years is a blessing because you can really just like be like a sponge and learn so much from them by working with them. So I've always been more of a hired gun, at least in the early films. And you know, all that stuff's above my pay grade. I'm always grateful to get the call or the email that says, you know, we're green lighting another one. But you know, as the we've cycled through a lot of different directors. Many of them have done a couple, you know, in a row and stuff like that. And I feel like there's when a new director kind of comes on, there's a bit of a trust there that says, hey, you've been playing this character for a long time. You've lived, you know, in his boots, so to speak. So what do you think he'd do here? How do you think he'd handle this situation, deliver it? So there's a lot of trust that comes along with the territory. And you know, I always find that the directors and the people that I work with are very humble and just very open to that kind of collaboration and that input. But I do try to stay in my lane, you know, writers write, actors act, directors direct. And when there's room for kind of collaboration and letting the best idea come forth, I'll gladly take that. But I do try to honor those people who create in different ways and do my job and to deliver the best job I can with what they give me to work with. So it usually isn't a problem. You know, they usually bring me good stuff, and it's a pleasure to kind of lean into it.
Mike mentioned earlier that, you know, a big part of why he started this show was to highlight movies like this and everything. And I know for like the last 10 years or so, like as I've like gotten into movies like this, a constant frustration I have, and I'm not going to name any movies, but a constant frustration I have is like you'll see stuff in the theater that's like, you know, $200 million, and you're like, this looks like garbage. Where's all the money go? Of course it's going to the stars, but like, but then you know, it's exciting to watch something like what you guys made. And you know, I'll be candid, I've only seen the latest Sniper. I've seen the first and the latest, so I have a lot of catching up to do. But I saw it because Vice and Mike were talking so highly of it, and I wanted to see it before putting together the stunt awards for Vulture too. And
Right, yeah.
so I was just I'm always when I see a movie like this, I'm always blown away because I'm like, you guys don't have the budgets of these other movies, and it's like, what are I guess it's a two-part question. One, what are some of the challenges of that? Are there things that you have to cut back when you're are there I guess are there moments that you have to cut back on, or do you guys just go all out and, you know, hope for the best, I guess? But also, does that ever frustrate you too? You don't have to name movies, obviously, but does that ever frustrate you that, you know, you guys are putting in all this effort for much less money, and then you see these big movies and you're just like, where is this money going? It's like they're flushing money like down the toilet. It's frustrating for me, and I'm not even making this stuff, so
Yeah, I mean that's a good question, and we you know, we always strive to do the best with what little we have. And you know, to your point about, you know, an action movie having a hundred, $200 million budget and then all the marketing on top, it's I think it all just boils down to more money, more problems. You know, more money means more people involved, more opinions, more this, more things that could go wrong, more things to manage. So it really is just about scalability. You know, we work with a much smaller crew, and I think it does come down to planning, you know, meticulously kind of planning. We don't have days to waste. We can't miss our days, we can't miss our shots. And you know, sometimes you won't get as many takes on a scene that you'd prefer to have because you got to keep going. Every day matters, every hour matters. But I think that's great because it encourages people to really pitch in, work together, be prepared as possible. And you know, we've been really blessed between our directors and our guy Daniel at Sony, our writers, our fellow actors. They really found some great people to step up and just put their all into it, which, you know, at a smaller budget, that spirit of collaboration and community becomes key. That's the only thing that's going to get you through. So yeah, I love that we always try to push the envelope and deliver all the hits, literally and figuratively, to people that are showing up for these kind of movies, and we're finding fun, creative ways to do it with a little bit less than maybe the studios can throw at their projects as well. But yeah, you know, it's not like we don't run into our own problems. We just have to find our way. Whereas I suppose they, if they run into problems, they'd be like, "Ah, oh, we're just going to shut down this week and eat the you know, $1 million." It's like we don't really have that option unless we actually want to get a movie out there.
I might be, hopefully I'm not jumping on a question Mike might have, but it's on my mind too. Malta is a big topic of conversation for this podcast because it's like, this is like maybe the second or third I've seen in the last few years where Malta is just like a special effect in and of itself because it looks so incredible. And so what's it like filming there, you know, for this latest movie?
Yeah, that was a great experience. You're talking about Sniper Grit.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which is on Netflix now, but came out last September. We did film that in Malta the year previous, which is my first experience there. And for those that don't know, and I had no idea because I knew Malta was a country. I didn't know exactly where, but you know, you've got Italy, the boot, and then you've got Sicily, that Italy's kicking its arse. And then you've got a little tiny dot right below Sicily, and that's Malta. It's like, I think it's like 14 miles by 36 miles. It's very, very tiny, but right in the middle there of that body of water, which has always made it very strategic and therefore very historic for all the cultures and the wars and everything that have gone through that area. And so it's got a lot of natural forts and strongholds and very interesting kind of coastlines with fortifications and just very, very beautiful. Obviously, you're in the Mediterranean, so the blue skies and the blue ocean and everything else too really lends to the scenery. So, you know, in Sniper Grit, they featured so much of that, you know, because it was just, why not get it? It's really incredible. Seaside cliffs and everything else too. So I think it added a lot of production value, being able to go there. And, you know, it's one of these things where they had kind of set themselves on going there, and then you kind of tailor the script a little bit to kind of use that as also a star of the movie. And I thought they did a really masterful job of doing that. And, you know, hopefully we didn't open the door so much that everyone keeps flooding that place and we can never go back. We'll see.
Well, that's actually, it's actually funny because I was having a little chat on Twitter with your producer, Bay, and he was saying, you know, the first movie that really, I think for a lot of us, put Malta on the map was Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday with Scott Adkins. And Bay was basically saying that's part of the reason they looked at Malta, is that movie looked so gorgeous for under $5 million. Right. Like not even close to $5 million. And that's one of the things that I find so fascinating about low budget VOD direct to video action movies, is one of the things we complain about a lot is the lack of practical locations in big budget movies. I won't name the movie. I'll just say it's the fourth part in a series from Millennium that literally could not put its lead actor in a vehicle. They CGI'd him into a vehicle during one of the major chases. And yet all these $2 to $5 million budget movies are using these practical locations because you guys are really taking the time to find the places like Malta or the places like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, Sofia, Bulgaria, that you could really make into whatever you wanted and use the city to its own best effect rather than trying to hash out a volume set of Los Angeles, you know?
Right. Yeah, and that's always the trade-off, right? It's it could be more convenient to shoot it on the green screen and in a studio and VFX the hell out of it, but at the same time, it's, you know, I think audiences do get a little bit tired of that. They have a little bit of VFX fatigue, and so practical is, it comes with its own host of problems, as you can imagine. Everything from the light to the weather to, you know, this, that, and whatever else. You know, we had cars that, you know, just we're ready to shoot and the car doesn't start. And so you run into a lot of things that you have to kind of, you know, game plan for, and some things are out of your control. And so you have to have contingency plans all over the place. And, you know, I understand the lure and the temptation to be able to just throw everyone up on a green screen and then let the editors and post, you know, figure that sort of stuff out on their own schedule. But yeah, I do think that, you know, the best movies, you know, if they're going to use VFX, which, you know, we do for muzzle flashes and certain explosions and whatever, but I think they're very conscious of not pushing that too hard, because I do think audiences get pretty fatigued by the fact that they know it's fake. And if you know it's fake and you can't suspend your disbelief, it kind of spits you out. as an audience member, and you don't want to break that immersion, I suppose. And that's kind of the tricky dance that I understand studios have to kind of play. Whereas, we don't have the budget for massive VFX, so it's kind of a good thing. It forces us to really use what we got, and I think the results speak for themselves.
Well, here, so I'm gonna get a little like into the nerd details a little bit. Like, I'm not gonna ask you what's your favorite sniper movie. Well, actually, I am, but what I'm gonna ask you is, which we mentioned the locations and using what you have at hand as part of what kind of makes them work so well. But just what was your favorite, or maybe like what's your not favorite or best? What was your most enjoyable? Which of the series did you find like the most fun to film, or just like the most enjoyable, or maybe even the easiest, depending because of the circumstances around it? You know, the stories themselves take place, and they have it's a more it's an international story though, and I think for the most part, a lot of this it's shot on location. Well, not on location, but you use various locations to good effect. So, which one is probably the best experience you had so far when the series?
You make me choose between my babies.
Yeah.
I'm such a proud papa. I always joke that it's my favorite sniper movie is the last one we did. Just because you never know when the train's gonna stop rolling. And I love to have a lot of gratitude. These movies changed my career, and they've just been such a joy to keep coming back to. And I know that's a rare gift as an actor, but it's a twofold answer to that question, just because Sniper Grit was fun. If anyone's seen the Sniper movies all along, Sniper Grit and the Rogue Mission before that had a bit of a tonal shift. We kind of lead a little bit more into the buddy cop humor a little bit and some zingers, and really just kind of made it well-rounded entertainment instead of just the very, very sober, hardcore action that perhaps most people were used to. So that was a real joy for me to be able to try on for size and to kind of lean into a little bit more. And I had just wonderful vision from Oliver Thompson, the writer director. He did all the music, and he just has such a great stylistic approach to this. And I think that that showed on screen. And of course, my co-star Ryan Robbins, who plays Agent Zero, and he was just always fun to bounce things off of. And I think Dennis Haysbert even, enjoyed playing the Colonel because he got some real fun scenes to chew on as well with our resident hacker, nerdy, hilarious Josh Brenner, who plays Intelligence Pete. So I really loved leaning into that. I think that was a joy for all the actors there to be able to just have a lot of fun while also kicking a lot of arse. So it was a nice sweet spot for me. And I know that a lot of hardcore action fans are kind of clamoring to get back into the really, really gnarly stuff that they expect from sniper movies and everything. And I totally hear that, but it was really fun to do a couple where we got to kind of lean into, the Butch and Sundance side of our characters a little bit.
Yeah, I mean
Oh
that's
yeah,
the
and,
oh sorry, go ahead, Vice.
well, I would say as a, well, I said we know this is a nerd podcast, but also like we're also very much meathead friendly. You can't tell on the screen, but our friend Brendan, he's like a linebacker, and I don't look it, but I can deadlift 100 pounds. So we're about the beef, and so like part of that dynamic is it's not a, this series isn't afraid, at least especially in these recent entries. Not afraid to have that kind of that bro comedy with it, but like not like a not to be like degrading or demeaning. It's like it's part of the charm of it all. It's like these are like this is like a dude's all inclusive dude friendly action. I guess it's like like a the part where you're like, I got you newsy, I got you sunglasses. You know, like this the fun comedy of all the fun venture of it. Like it's still like it's not it's macho in a way, but like not like the kind of the traditional machoness where it's like a it's very like negative and very like aggro. It's like no, this is cool dudes having a great adventure, So that's that's one part of it. I think that's part of the appeal over time is that the original movie, like as you mentioned, like it's a very serious, somber, like wartime adventure, and now it kind of it's kind of become this kind of cool kind of all encompassing adventure. Like anybody can jump on, it's not just like it's not just like dad. They're term dad movie, which I reckon that the original Sniper is like a quintessential dad movie. But these are like kind of the and that's also a positive. It's still in classification, but yeah. But now in this case, especially the last read, like it really feels like a full on like all inclusive adventure that anybody can jump onto. Like even though there's 10 films now, like you could come almost kind of jump in anywhere, but specifically now with I guess what we're calling I guess we call it the Lady Death series. I don't know what the official title is. What you guys call it here, but the last three, it's kind of yeah, you can jump in here, Yeah, anybody can have fun with it. It's really cool. But I really appreciate that growth of the franchise.
You're totally right, and I think that that was really fun, and that kind of helped us do really well on launch, and of course on Netflix when we hit the U.S. we're the top 10 for another 7 or 8 days with a bunch of our movies when they dropped on Christmas Day.
Yeah,
Rogue Mission stayed in the top 10 most watched movies on Netflix when we released there last winter for about 9 days. And so, you know, I do think that it kind of makes it more accessible because it's not just, you know, as you say, you know, the dad movies who show up for the heavy action and the war and the seriousness and the arse kicking. But, you know, it's like dad can also bring mom, you know, and the wife and this and that and whatever now too with these, because it's a lot more popcorn. So I do think that it did hit that chord, and it was fun for us to lean into because we carried a team element into Assassin's End. It was kind of the characters were set up. Rogue Mission, we kind of lean into the team a little bit more with, you know, the Colonel Dennis Haysbert being our de facto team leader. And then we got to really lean into it hard in Sniper Grit, which was a very interesting wrinkle in the Sniper franchise because, you know, usually it's a rotation of me and or Tom Berenger and or Billy Zane playing their characters and or Dennis Haysbert. But, you know, the team that I'm down there boots on the ground with either gets killed or they never come back or we don't know what happens to them. So it was fun to be able to kind of lean into that, layer that onto the characters and lean into it. It was really fun. You know, I referenced Butch and Sundance, you know, Butch Cassidy, the Sundance Kid, which is one of my all-time favorite classics, Redford and Paul Newman. And, you know, I think just having that gallows humor and, you know, you having lived it yourself, you know, it's just like once you rise to the top of your game, once you've seen some stuff, once you've been in the shit, so to speak, it's just like, you know, what else can you have, you know, except a sense of gallows humor, you know, to kind of keep things light in an otherwise dark situations. And I think that that's, you know, mostly true and indicative of people's experiences because, you know, whatever. And I think some of the best movies that have actions and some high stakes stuff, it's like, you know, that levity becomes important because, you know, what else are you going to do? You know, how else are you going to look at this sort of situation? So I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to do that once in a while because I think it's refreshing and I think it's a little bit more true to form with stuff like this.
Well, and especially with these last three, because you and Ryan Robbins have such amazing bro chemistry in terms of, you know, how you interact, how you play off one another. It's some minor spoilers. Everybody that listens to this will have seen Grit by now, but I don't want to get too, but some minor spoilers, you know, the scene in Grit where you guys have to remove the tracker from LD,
my favorite,
is so fucking gruesome and so fucking hilarious at this. I absolutely lost it when there's a point where Ryan Robbins just looks at you and goes, holy fucking shit, I will punch you in the face. And I just lost it. Like, I absolutely lost it. And that is a nice refreshing change, I think, because I like all the movies as well, but you're 10 into this. You know, you do at a certain point, any franchise that lasts that long, whether it's Bond or Fast and Furious or this, even Mission Impossible, is going to have to change up the formula every once in a while. And I think this makes it a really smart way to change it up, especially given the chemistry amongst all the cast members. And, you know, I know, Luna Fujimoto came in as Lady Death for the first time in this one, but she slides right in seamlessly, just absolutely feels like she's been part of the team for a decade. And that, you know, that kind of chemistry is hard. So when you find it, I think you guys like ride that for as long as you can.
Yeah. And you know, I love that. That scene is my favorite and I'll try not to give too many spoilers, but you know, it kind of had a flash of the Bourne Identity. You know, we go rescue our friend Lady Death. It turns out that LD had some trackers literally sewn into some bullet wounds. So, you know, we're kind of doing the grisly work of performing open surgery on our friend with zero experience. And so it's me and Zero, Ryan Robbins, trying to extract these tracking devices so we can use them to our advantage and, of course, keep her and ourselves safe. So it was a really fun, high-stakes kind of comedic scene, the way it turned out. And that's all credit to Oliver Thompson. You know, he really let us try this stuff on for size and trusted us to be able to banter and to deliver this sort of stuff and hit the timing, you know, while also keeping the stakes high. And we really appreciated the opportunity in his writing. He's got a great comedic sensibility. that I really like and appreciate. So, you know, that was a real pleasure to be able to do that. But, you know, you were talking about Luna Fujimoto. We had a wonderful actress from Japan named Sayaka Akimoto, who originated the Lady Death role, and I thought she did a great job. I'm not sure why she couldn't join us on this past one. Maybe it was schedule, maybe it was something else, but we had to replace her with Luna Fujimoto, who has a martial arts background, and I think you see how well she delivered that stuff in Sniper Grit. But she was wonderful to work with, came up just so grateful and so eager, and put her all behind it. And so I think she really delivered. And you know, Brandon, as you know, she made your list, my friend. The best stunt sequence there with her huge oner taking down an endless mob of baddies.
And I just have to say, like, I can't take full credit for that, because these stunt things are like a collaboration from like all kinds of different people nominating. And when I saw how much support she was getting, I couldn't have been happier, because that's, for me, that was probably my favorite fight from last year. Just couldn't, like, I loved the movie the whole way through, and then you get to that fight and you're like, holy shit, like, this is incredible. So yeah, pulling for her in the stunt awards. We'll be revealing those winners in March. But I actually wanted to ask, sort of on that same line, probably a dumb question because I feel like everyone has the same answer to this, but what are your thoughts on an eventual stunt Oscar? Do you think that's something that needs to happen?
I mean, that's something that I really do hope it happens. It does feel long overdue. I mean, just maybe people aren't aware because they don't do these type of movies, or they don't know how they're put together. But having been blessed to do so many of these things on my own end, it's like you can't have these movies without amazing stunt coordinators and professionals, and it's really, they make all the difference in the world. And I try to give as much props as I can, because you know, even though I don't really use a double very much, only on very extreme things, I prefer to do it myself, because that's usually better for the movie, better for the editors. But you know, without someone putting together super creative, you know, fisticuff dances and shootouts, and you know, looking after the safety, you know, and I mean, we had a handful of stunt doubles that we just kept redressing and killing all over again. And it's like, it's really hard work. And these guys are so good, because I, you know, I'm novice. You know, I'm nowhere near a Scott Adkins or a Michael Jai. You know, and without the stunt actors working with me and doing what they do to make me look good, I mean, they're incredible scene partners, you know, and they're just as important as any line of dialogue, as any of the major characters. So I think they're long overdue to get the recognition that they sorely deserve. You know, I mean, if we didn't have them, you would not have an entire genre of movies that people across the world love. You know, we've been blessed to work with a company called Hits International for the past three films. And they actually recommended Luna. Brett Chan recommended Luna just because they had worked together on some films, and she stepped right in seamlessly. But we're really blessed. They do Warrior, they do Halo, they do amazing things all around the world. And I know that we had Vincent Bouillon, who you also gave props to in your stunt awards. You know, he doubles for Keanu Reeves, and he was there kind of guiding us through a lot of creative action sequences and everything else too. So him and his whole team and everyone involved is just made the movie that much better. And I think that's what great stunt teams and performers do. They just elevate what you've got on that page, and I think they deserve to have that recognition at the highest level.
And I think you're right that people take it for granted too, because in putting, you know, these awards together for the second year now, it's like you almost would have never imagined that Vincent would be on, you know, such a big project like John Wick, and then on something like this, and you know, doing high quality work on both. And it's like, I think people just look past that, and it's just, I really appreciate that answer.
Yeah, I mean, really, yeah, he's a great performer. Sorry, he's a great performer in and of himself. But also being so experienced and so good at what he does, to kind of come in and lead the way and draw up these fights for us that we then rehearse and then hopefully deliver the best we can on the day is, yeah, he's really incredible. And we've been real blessed to work with guys like him, across the board on all these movies.
I was wondering, like, you made, you know, six action at this point. You are an action star, even though you are an actor in the broader sense, with a broader spectrum of work. You're it now. Like, for example, in the Netflix queue, you know, on the menu screens, the title card for Grit, it's not just a team like the poster. It's you shirtless pumping, doing barbell cars.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah,
we know people know what they want to see.
Give me a chuckle.
I wish Liam were to see, because Liam is very much a he's all about the Steve-less hour of cinema. So I guess so. You mentioned the incredible stunt team and these, you know, veterans with this experience of how the action works. Do you feel that you're becoming more adept to that? Because I'm only half joking with the body, because like you stay in great shape for this stuff, which is like that's very much part of the action hero role as well. And as you mentioned, a lot of that is you on camera doing the cool moves. Do you think that are you becoming more of an expert yourself, or do you just kind of still like you just kind of jump into it and out of it as time goes? Because I feel like you mentioned you may not be like Scott Atkins or Michael Jai White level, but like I mean you're up there, right? You're like the Tom Cruise of DTV, man. You're like you get the moves and the looks, you know.
It's very flattering. I control what I can control on my end, and I've always had the philosophy, just because I've always enjoyed athletics and being very active, is that, you know, I imagine it's a lot harder to get it back if you lose it. So I've always tried to never lose it as best as I can. Yeah. And, you know, it's very strange for me, you know, to be put anywhere in the same category as a Scott Atkins or a Michael Jai White, just because these guys are the highest level of performers, martial artists, incredibly dedicated to their craft, and it shows. Whereas I've just been kind of like, I'll give it a shot, you know, and with a very modest background in, you know, just learning footwork and the technicalities of boxing, kickboxing, stuff like that. And then, you know, being able to adjust that for, you know, to sell things on camera. And so I just having an athletic background has kind of helped me fake my way through it. Whereas these guys could literally kick the head off a human being with their eyes closed. So it's very weird. I know we're in the same genre, and I've had the pleasure of working with Michael Jai White, and he's a wonderful guy. But it is very strange to think that I'm anywhere near their caliber and their category. You know, I think me and Ryan both, we do have an athletic background, but we're more just the guys that were willing to roll up our sleeves and like just throw us in the mix. And hopefully you get something great you can use, and, you know, knock on wood, we do give them some stuff they can use. So we're just kind of the Rudy Rudigers who are just not afraid to try anything you throw at us. So it's been a lot of fun.
That's why we got Sniper 11 has to have the Universal Soldier crossover, and we can finally settle this, you know, get you all on screen together.
Oh, dude, that would be so great. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's almost a question, which as I'm thinking about it, like the series is Sniper. And I think, you know, we mentioned like the John Wick stuff, like it just very fascinating to me that one of the, not criticisms, but just one of the aspects of John Wick as the film goes on, it's a very heavily detailed in about the firearms aspect of it all. Like, there's actually like real world physics and ballistics involved in this. So you like, they, even in the film themselves, they say the names of the weapons out loud. I thought it was fascinating that as the series as Sniper goes on, there's part of that. Like I remember in Ultimate Kill, I believe it was, there's a, the bad guy has the laser guided bullets, which are actually were a real thing that Darpa created. And then you guys, well, spoilers, I guess. And you guys countered that with the explosive warhead munitions, which again was also a real thing. They used this, it was called the objective crucial weapon in Afghanistan. It was like, they called it the Punisher. It was like, it was shoot, you could range find a target and it would explode overhead. So there's like real world basis for some of the cool shooting tech in the movies. But I thought it was fascinating that even though that's part of it in the text of the films, I feel like in a good way, you don't really have to fetishize that too much, which I think is this is kind of a sensitive topic, because with, you know, like gun violence, just like gun issues in general, and the people, the feedback between the media we watch and the lives we lead, there's always a conversation around. And so, like on its face, I haven't heard this, but thankfully, like, you know, some people might be hesitant, you know, when they're watching. I'm gonna watch 10 sniper films, like a guy about shooting people in the head, like. To some people, that could be a kind of make them have pause.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned before, like I like that. And I think it's unique in this way that there isn't this really like there's not this fetishization of violence. It's just more of a very much the funner tone of it all. Even though, you know, like again, like the concept of the sniper in real world is a pretty serious, pretty grim matter. You know, like in the first movie, one shot, one kill. But now, like you kind of made it so that it's it's more of an accessible action thing. And I kind of find that fascinating because, like, yeah, like as I mentioned, there's all kinds of other media, or just in America, but in the world in general, where we have this really kind of fixation on gun violence and weapons and stuff like that. You know, it's not, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes it's fun, sometimes it's a little serious. But I appreciate that. And that kind of brings you to the other part I want to talk about. Well, we're kind of going back and forth here, but another famous franchise that has kind of had in this conversation as well is the video games, actually, is the Call of Duty Modern Warfare series, which kind of has this pretty infamously, you know, has some controversial elements to it, you know, especially regarding good amounts of stuff. But that said, though, you know, I think that it takes, for the most part, its story seriously. So I wanted to ask you about your experience with that series, because if people, you know, people don't know, you're 3-1. You're one of the main characters in this newer Modern Warfare Call of Duty series. So I don't know. First of all, how did that come about, and how's the experience been of being a pretty integral part of this? You know, it's like, I, from what I understand, one of the biggest franchises, like highest grossing franchises in the world, like this whole game series. You're part of that as well too. Like, you're a big player, man. So like yeah, I just want to know, like, your experience with that, because that's a pretty big deal to be a part of.
Yeah, well, that's a great segue, because, you know, we're obviously dealing in our movies with the sensitivities of not just, you know, war, but guns, getting after bad guys, and you know, the mentality and what it takes to be a sniper and to kind of justify those things that you're asked to do. I think that Call of Duty Modern Warfare is I do play Alex Echo 3-1, Alex Keller. They had me originate this role in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2019. And so I got to originate this brand new role playing the lead of that video game, which was kind of a soft reboot of their very famous Modern Warfare trilogy from back in the day. So we had big shoes to fill, and luckily people responded very, very well to it, and my character is still very much alive and well in that universe. He was in the last game that they just released, Modern Warfare 3, as well as all the ongoing downloadable content and storylines and stuff like that. So that's been a real joy and a real pleasure. But Modern Warfare in particular has such a massive following and appreciation, because it does focus on gritty realism. And they really, I mean, the details just blow my mind, you know, and you'd have to be a lifelong, you know, service member to really just even understand what half of this stuff is. And I can't do it. You know, I like to play, and I like to stream Call of Duty on Twitch, at, you know, using my character. And it's a lot of fun. And I get why they sell 30 million copies a year. And then they've got, you know, hundreds of million more playing online every single day. It is really fun. It's very engaging, and it's just so hyper realistic, for better or worse. And I think people that love to just kind of immerse themselves in that arena. But, you know, I mean, you get some kind of an assault rifle, and then there's, like, I don't know, 3,000 different attachments you can choose from optics to muzzles to barrels to grips, you know, to your magazine and your stock. And I'm like, what even is this? Like, this is nuts. So, but, you know, having been on the inside of that, it's like they don't take anything for granted. They call in all the big guns. We got to work with a couple of really great Navy SEALs who gave us a bunch of walkthroughs and some technical, you know, things to be aware of when we were filming the original game. So they really invest, you know, in keeping it authentic, keeping it real. And it's quite a crazy endeavor, even in the way that they put these guns and these vehicles and these maps into the game. It's that, you know, they're very exhaustive, and I think the results kind of speak for themselves. They're just a behemoth out there in terms of first person shooter games. It's hard for anyone to hold a candle to them.
Well, and that's one of the fascinating contrasts to sort of your two big franchises, right? Is you are in Sniper, which is a movie, you know, movies that, to be fair, probably have budgets of around $3 million, $5 million, and Call of Duty, which each game has a budget upwards of $300 million. You know, so you really do get kind of the contrast in terms of resources and resource allocation and everything that can go into making something like this.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be more night and day. And I remember when we were about to drop Modern Warfare 2019, it was just before 2020 in the pandemic. And they drop one, you know, right around kind of like Black Friday every single year, October, November, they drop a new Call of Duty game. And when they dropped ours, you know, I'm a huge NFL football fan, so it was bonkers, man. I was seeing, you know, my character running through the teaser trailers on commercials during primetime NFL football Sunday. I'm like, this is nuts. And the director had warned us. He was like, hey, man, not only, I mean, these games take 3 years to make. They are a budget of like $250, $300 million for these games, but then they throw another $150, $200 million in marketing on top of it. And like, you're gonna see this stuff everywhere. And it's like, of course, people are in Times Square taking pictures of the Call of Duty billboards. And it was really surreal, you know, just the reach and the scope of this franchise and this game. It truly is worldwide. So yeah, it couldn't be more night and day between, you know, what you have to work with on a sniper movie versus what you get to work with. You know, I can't even wrap my head around the credits. I mean, literally thousands and thousands of people across the years that are making these video games. And it's not that we don't have a long credits list that rolls at our sniper movies, but it's not in the international literal thousands that it takes to put these things together. So it's been fun. It's been such a blessing to be part of two major global franchises that just keep on seeing, you know, it keeps on rolling, and people seem to really, really dig it. And you know, as an actor, being able to kind of come back home, so to speak, and keep things going instead of just having to go out there and pound the pavement and get brand new original work every single time is exhausting. So you know, both those franchises I'm blessed to be a part of, and I do hope we make many, many, many more.
So as it happens, we recently, in a recent episode, we talked to James Newman. He's a stuntman. He's done Olympic stunt work throughout his career, but he's also one of the key stunt performers, you could say, stunt performers and stunt capture performers in some of the offshoots, the Warzone series and the Vanguard. He does like a lot of the animations, the kill animations. That's him. He's captured. And
What was the name again? Sorry.
James Newman.
James Newman. Okay. I don't know if I had the pleasure of meeting him, but yeah, go on.
He's done like some of the Batman, the Gotham games as well. So
Oh,
he has a
cool.
pretty big experience with that. But he mentioned that he had mentioned that in his experience, the kind of it's not just well, it's, during the capture part, it kind of made us feel like almost like a theater stage, like a full-on, full-fledged like set. And you have to just you really do perform. It's not just like a you punch your arms or kicking the capture. Like you have to do an actual performance. Was that did you have kind of the same experience with like because the character, the Alex, the character, like it's very well. I just that the modern animations nowadays with video games is crazy. So you can definitely you can see the emotion in your face, in
It's
your video.
you. It's wild. It is
Oh,
like
yeah.
100% Chad Michael Collins as Alex Keller.
It's like was that how did that like was that an awkward experience? Like, or did it just kind of feel like you're just doing the same or a similar process? It's just like think the dots on your face. Like, how did that work out?
Yeah, and you know, just a little a quick backstory. You know, the Call of Duty game was something I auditioned for, and I you know, no details about the project, just because when you're dealing with those kind of budgets, it's all NDA papered up. And I did go to, they call it the volume, the motion capture stage. I went to Infinity Ward's motion capture stage. I worked with Brian Bloom, who's a writer and prolific actor in his own right. And Taylor Kurosaki had directed that game. And yeah, we just played through some scenes for 20 minutes. We actually talked about the sniper movies after the fact. I didn't hear anything for 6 to 8 weeks. And then I got the call that the job was mine. And I was like, great, what's the job? It's like, we can't tell you that yet. I'm like, okay, sign me up though. And so, you know, we did all the official scans at Activision and everything else too. And we learned what this ambitious project was that they were doing, kind of like the first rehearsal day on set when we all got together. And then they kind of pulled back the curtain for us, so we knew what we're stepping into. But yeah, it's a very different process. You know, you're talking about the helmet rig, and you've got a close-up cam on you at all times, you know, attached to a little iron bar that faces right back into your mug. And so that captures, you know, your details like right down to the nitty-gritty, for better or worse. So you've always got a close-up on you, but you're right, you've got an entire studio ringed with cameras that's always picking you up 360. And usually the director's rocking around on a Steadicam, you know, weaving. But you know, us actors, at least, you know, the character that I'm a part of, you know, what we do are the cinematic cutscenes, you know, the plot devices, the storylines, the mission intros and outros, because you know, we'll have a team, we'll have a mission debrief, And then, you know, as the mission begins, that's when you kind of zoom in and now you see the barrel of the gun, and it's true first person perspective as the player goes and steps into those boots and tries to execute that mission. And then when they complete it, it zooms out and here we are again, you know, having a wrap up or an exfil or a debrief kind of thing. And so we are responsible for mostly doing those beautiful cinematic cutscenes in between missions, the intros and outros to those missions that the players then get to play through. But you know, to your point, like the stunt actors become so important in those things too, because I've never really had to do stunts outside of what was required for a cinematic scene. But you know, if you play through these games, you're running, you're jumping, you're sliding, you're you know, executing people, you're obviously firing and rolling and crouching and going prone and all this other crazy stuff. And so you've got super high level stunt performers who come in and they get that likeness into their system, and then you can take that likeness and you can kind of throw it on any character, you know, as you're playing through them as a player. So they're just as crucial and important, you know, and probably even more behind the scenes heroes in the mocap space than they even are in the TV and film world. So, you know, Oscars all around across all genres.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask, speaking of contrast and resources, I don't want to necessarily switch us back to Sniper, but I think it's on point because one of the things that we've gotten a lot when we've had guests on this show who work in the DTV arena, especially ones who've been doing it for as long as you have, is one of the things they constantly point out is over the last 10 to 15 years, the thing that's really hit the low budget indie action world hard is shooting days are just getting cut left and right. So they're going down, you know, where something like Undisputed 2 may have been filmed in 30, 35 days. They're filming Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday in like 16 days. You know, they're have you noticed that on the Sniper series? Is that something that's kind of hitting you guys too?
Yeah, and I think that's the great dilemma and the challenge of anybody who's going to work with a lower budget is, you know, if you're lucky enough to get a budget ever and to make a serviceable action movie that does well, you know, naturally you're thinking, well, if you gave us more, we'd make an even better product, right? But they're saying, yeah, but you made a great product with just this amount. So we'll just give you that amount again, but like, see if you can make it better, or we'll give you a little less, you know? So that's kind of the reverse thinking when you're talking about like creative versus the actual nuts and bolts of financing and everything else too. So it's like the better you do with a smaller budget, you know, the people on the other end of the table sit there and say, well, you can just do that again for the same, you know? And so it's really, they're not thinking of pay bumps. They're not thinking of releasing more. They're thinking you can keep making great products and it costs less. And that kind of, if our bottom line's lower, our profits down the road will be better. So it's like you can understand that side of the business as well. But, you know, it does become a challenge. And you had referenced, you know, John Wick earlier. And I love watching those videos of Keanu Reeves really throwing himself into this character, you know, training, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and doing three-gun stuff with Terran Tactical up here in Simi Valley, and who I've had the pleasure of meeting and working with a couple of times. But he just really threw himself into it. And, you know, but he probably got months, you know, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is. And I think that that's a nice perk for the actors, you know, doing a big budget film, is that you're going to get the training, the basic training, or, you know, the poor man's version of a basic training, and really just get to work with amazing instructors and kind of get it in your bones a little bit more. You know, us actors working at this level, it's like that's on us mostly. I mean, we have wonderful coordinators and consultants on set who have real life experience, and I lean into their knowledge and expertise really, really hard with all humility, because you got to have humility when you're working with, you know, someone like yourself who really knows what they're doing. But you know, we have to go maybe acquire our own skill sets and kind of work on these things on our own, because we're not going to get that 1 week, 2 week, 5 week, 6 month prep that would be afforded actors, you know, who are playing soldiers and stuff like that on a bigger budget movie. So, you know, the more you can kind of do on your own as an actor, it's just better for you to be able to bring that to each production that you're lucky to be a part of.
We had James Nunn on a couple of weeks ago, the director of One Shot and One More Shot, and he was telling us, you know, that whole thing with those movies is they're one continuous take. You know, it's obviously digitally edited. But this one, one more shot, they shot it in an airport and they only had about 4 hours a night to shoot. They shot the entire thing, actual shooting time. He said it was about, I think it was a 20-day shoot, but actual shooting time was 80 hours. They shot the entire movie in 80 hours, which you could hear us. If you go back and listen to that episode, you can hear us all just, our jaws all just drop that, you know, but he points out that that's only possible because he's working with not just an amazing stunt crew, but Scott Adkins, Michael Jai White, Tom Berenger, you know, people that are absolute pros and can just walk in and be like, fuck, okay, I got to do a fight and I got 3 hours to prep for it. I guess let's go in the hallway and start throwing some kicks, you know? Yeah. And it's such an insane world. Yet I feel like in a lot of ways, the quality of the movies that we're seeing now, maybe this is, you're right. Maybe you guys are your own worst enemies because the quality of action movies that we're seeing right now in that arena is so good. Every year there's four or five that just blow my mind. So yeah, maybe you guys need to start, you know, torpedoing a couple every once in a while.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we got to put some turns out there and like see what happens if you don't give us the money.
It's kind of like Christmas, right?
Well. I don't won't age well for anyone involved.
every couple of years you have to burn a Christmas, right? Because every year you're given the family better and better presents, and then after about 4 years, you're like, I got to fucking tank this one.
I love your thinking, but you know, unfortunately, that stain goes with you everywhere you go with your director and actor and stuff like that. So, you know, logically, that's the flip side of the coin, right? Is to kind of throwing the towel on one and say, see, now if you could just do this, like, oh no, you're out completely. this. So it is really incredible. And a movie like One Shot, you know, so much goes into the rehearsal. I mean, if you're going to try to do a oneer, I mean, my God, like what you're really using your money for is probably a lot of rehearsal and tech rehearsal and setups, just so like on the day you can hit the ground running and do it as most efficiently as possible with no, you know, kind of mitigating for when an actor falls or slips or a light goes out or, you know, your memory card's full on the camera. So, but that stuff is impressive. And I do think that people are finding creative ways and pushing the envelope with less and less money. And that's really hard to do and replicate. But, you know, it's just kind of having the mentality of doing the most you can with what little you've got. And, you know, I do think it's everyone's kind of goal to like sort of level up. You know, if you're making a great action movie for $1 million, it's like, God, imagine if we had 2 million, you know, it's like you want to. And I think that's unfortunate. We, you know, a lot of directors kind of get stuck. And I've had a lot of conversations with directors we've worked with where it's just kind of like, yeah, I deliver a great movie on $1 to $3 million. But then nobody wants to, you know, elevate my budget to this. So like, no, just keep doing this. You're really good at it. And he's like, yeah, but I want to level up. Like, I want to play with more things. I want to have more money to throw into the production value and et cetera. And it's just kind of like, no, you just stay there. And so I think that, you know, there's a weird kind of reverse price that these creatives pay because they're so good at doing this thing that maybe they can get locked in and pigeonholed into only being allowed to do this thing because they're really good at it. And so it becomes a dilemma of like, when does an actor make a director make a leap and try to step outside of that box so that they can kind of expand their repertoire and work with bigger budgets. And
I've to that point, I've become a little convinced, this not to be conspiracy brained here, but I've become convinced that a lot of these bigger studios are taking these people right out of Sundance who have no action background because they know they can control the vision that they want. Whereas, you know, the guys you're working with have all the experience in the world, can do it really well. And it's like, oh, well, we don't want that here because they're going to bring their own vision. And it's frustrating because you keep seeing these big tent poles and it's like, oh, is someone like really interesting going to direct it? And it's like, oh no, it's somebody who made a movie at Sundance where two people spoke to each other for an hour and a half and there's no action in it. And it's like, oh, I'm sure the action's going to be great in this movie. And it's like very frustrating, but
I've joked really quick, Brandon, sorry. Oh, yeah. I've joked with James before. I've told him he needs to just go make a Sundance movie. He needs to forget working with Scott Adkins, go make a little indie coffee shop drama for Sundance. Sorry, Brandon.
This is kind of unrelated to sort of to like process and stuff like that. Just something that I find really cool that you do that I've noticed. with your Twitch streams, and then, just seeing you on Twitter interact with people. Like, I notice when you see people, pumping up the sniper movies, you're very keen to, jump in and, just like kind of interact with them. And I just, what kind of can it's very cool to see, someone who has a fan base like yours kind of like, give back and everything like that. What kind of compels you to do that, to do the Twitch streams and everything? Like, what's that like for you to have, like, 'cause you like you said, you have fans in two different markets, so to speak, a film series and a game series. What's that like to kind of, keep up a rapport with them a little bit?
Yeah, I think that it's I mean, look, I had low expectations. Like I was telling you, beforehand, acting was just a hobby. And I was like, if I could ever make a couple bucks off this, that'd be really fun. But now it's turned into a full-blown, full-time career. And I've never lost the gratitude. I only got in this for the fun. I didn't get in this to chase trophies or anything else like that. I love what I do between Sniper and Call of Duty and all the other projects. I'm happy to do this forever, as long as they'll have me. And I really enjoy this sort of stuff. So obviously I tried to put out, the stuff that I'm lucky to be a part of out there as much as possible. Sniper's been so good to me. And so I always want to get more eyeballs on it. And I always want to be able to engage our audience around the world and encourage people to watch it. And the same thing with Call of Duty, as well. So I think social media is a great opportunity to really, connect with the fans, and if they can make a post and take 30 seconds to say, "Hey, I watched this, really enjoyed it, sharing with my friends, it's nothing for me to take 5 seconds to say, "Hey, thank you, really, truly, I sincerely appreciate that." And I think that's a really important component, and I've always tried to keep the gratitude, not just about my acting career, but the projects I get to be a part of. And we don't get to do this stuff without people watching it, and putting butts in the seats and everything else too. So someone's going to take an hour and a half out of their time to take a flyer on our movie when there's a million movies they could choose from. I do think it's important to kind of connect with those people and thank them and encourage them to come back for more and to kind of honor them. The Twitch streaming is something I picked up, during the pandemic. Our game had just come out. It just set all sorts of new records when it dropped. And then they kind of released the Fortnite-inspired Warzone, which is a big battle royale component to Call of Duty, which is massively popular, and I still play to this day. So that kind of dropped, and I was like, "All right, what is this? What is this multiplayer thing? This co-op player thing that everyone's so nuts about in Call of Duty?" And I just started streaming it on a lark, not knowing what I was doing, and it was really fun. And it's really, I can understand the appeal, and maybe Alec, you can weigh in on this, but I find that so many current and former veterans love playing Call of Duty. And I've met so many wonderful, people of that thing, and work with charities and stuff like that, of people who just love to do, the video game stuff, especially Call of Duty, because that was a life that they lived or are currently living. So I love this stream on Twitch playing Call of Duty. I'm not great. I'm mid or trash, maybe. Trash is what the kids say. Because so I do get smoked by 12-year-olds, unfortunately, which is very humbling. But I know I grew up in Nintendo. I'm like, why are there 32 buttons? I'm used to two.
Time comes
But
for us
it is
all.
wicked fun, and it's very endearing to the fans. And the cool part is, the Call of Duty, gamers go and then take a flyer on the sniper movies and really enjoy them. And then the sniper fans will pick up Call of Duty and start playing for the first time. So it's really cool. And the Alex and the Brandon Beckett character have a lot of overlap and are very similar. Which is also very, very cool. So it's been a really nice thing I do on the side that, as you say, kind of keeps the spirit of community going and keeps more eyeballs on the projects, and is a chance to just really express gratitude for people who support the projects that I'm in.
There's actually one other thing that I wanted to ask you about playing Alex. So spoilers for the new Modern Warfare trilogy. Alex loses a leg at one point, and you are playing an amputee with an insanely badass foot. But also, I know you are actually blessed to have both legs, but there is still something important about the visibility and the accessibility of playing a character like that. What is it like for you to actually play a character like that?
I really I thought it was incredible what they did, and they I think they took a chance on this sort of thing, and I I love that. So, you know, kind of the backstory, which I'll try not to spoil, but you know, our game is the original game I was a part of is 4 years old now. So I think most people are aware of the story and everything else too. But you know, at the end of Modern Warfare 2019, we're going to kind of blow up a chemical gas factory, and we have these remote detonators. We get in a firefight, and the detonator gets destroyed. And you know, Alex has aligned himself with the freedom fighters, whose country are being occupied. And they're being held down, so we're trying to liberate them, and he just kind of gets thrown in there by the CIA to help them out, and he kind of really allies with our cause, and he kind of goes rogue a little bit and sides with them, and he volunteers to basically sacrifice himself and manually detonate these things, knowing he's probably not going to get out of this thing alive. So that's how the game ends, and we don't know what happens to Alex. We never see him again. You know, so but if you don't see a body. So luckily that worked in my favor, because when they did, you know, the Warzone component, they kind of continued the storyline and explored it more, and Alex kind of made a return, and you're right, he lost part of his leg from the knee down, and so they give him a prosthetic, but he's just as capable, and he's you know, just as much in the fight. And I just thought that was a really unbelievable tribute, you know, and a recognition on their part, you know, that I'm honored to kind of play and lean into. And I can't tell you the people that have reached out to me over the years, you know, because they themselves, or they knew someone, or someone they served with. There's even streamers and gamers out there who literally are, you know, using, you know, mouth controllers and stuff like that because of certain things that they've gone through, or they don't, you know, because they're amputees as well. And it's just really cool to see. I think it's very endearing. I know that the people I've talked to really appreciate that representation. So it's become a unique part of the Alex character and kind of the lore of him. And you know, because he's one of the very few American characters in the Call of Duty universe. A lot of them are British or international. And I got to originate a true blue American character, CIA, SAD, and all the other, you know, qualifications that he'd kind of racked up through American military. So it's been a real pleasure and a real honor, and it's just awesome to see him so well received. And you know, I hope Alex keeps on coming back.
Did you? I actually watched an old interview with you right around the time I think 2019 came out, or had to be a little after that. But talking about that knowing this, you wanted to talk to some people and see if you maybe needed to change the physicality of your performance. Did
Yeah.
is that something that you've done? Have you changed sort of how you move as you're doing the capture on this and stuff like that?
No, and maybe it is true to a certain extent, you know, some of those subtleties, but you know, from my understanding, as the technology gets better and better and better, it's really that sort of gap has just keeps getting closed. So, you know, I was kind of told that I wouldn't need to do any major kind of modifications in terms of the way you walk and whatever else too. But you know, even in filming, you know, because this is all added in digitally in the end, of course, is in post. But you know, just to kind of be aware of it. You know, we shot a scene where, you know, our team kind of ventures into a room rigged with explosions and some content that was released this summer, as we go on the hunt for you know, a baddie in an underground kind of abandoned bunker. And there's a scene where, you know, people live fire, and the heat from the bullet gets on one of the fuses and one of the charges. And so I got to run over there and kind of stamp it out. And it just so happens that the natural movement would have been to stamp it out with my prosthetic leg, the blade, and stuff like that. And so, you know, you have a conversation with the director and be like, hey, I know it's the left leg. You know, would you want this featured, you know, sort of thing? Because I think it'd be a really cool thing to have this right up, you know, close and personal, to be able to let them see, you know, this thing really playing strongly as a part of who this character is, and kind of represent that. Like, oh my God, I love that idea. You know, if you could stamp out the fuse with the blade, the prosthetic, that'd be awesome, because the camera's right here and it's going to feature and play so prominently. And I'm like, yeah, as long as it's not going to be difficult for your editors and your animators, you know, let's go for it. I think that's such a part of, you know, who the character is. And I think that the people who have relative experience, for better or worse, around this is really going to appreciate that, you know, it's like, this may have happened, but he's still more just as capable, and is never going to be kind of held down or held back by that sort of stuff. And I think that's a really inspiring message that they kind of just put out there in inspiring ways, by just by the nature of the fact that he does have this.
Well, and I love that it does highlight, because I think a lot of people in their minds, they still view a prosthetic as, you know, the old plastic, try to look like a foot, but doesn't work very well kind of prosthetics. Mm-hmm. And I love that it does highlight, you know, how far the technology for this stuff has come, how much it doesn't disable you necessarily anymore, how much you can still, you know, do, like you said, be in the game, be still there at the forefront. And so again, I think it's, you know, I know it's a giant multi-hundred million dollar franchise from Activision. I don't want to pat it on the back too much, but I think it's a really, really, I think it's a really great, it's a really great thing for visibility. And I'm very happy that somebody like you gets that appreciates and understands the sort of the magnitude of doing that, gets to play that character.
Yeah, it's not lost on me. And, you know, it's a big responsibility in a way to kind of represent that well. And I do take that very seriously, you know, whether it's the sniper movies or Call of Duty, it's like, you know, we're representing this. Like I said, you know, to Alec before we began the interview, it's like, you know, it's never lost on me. I'm doing this for pretend. And I don't get to do this for pretend if there aren't real life heroes doing it for real, whose stories we're trying to tell. So that's always in the forefront of my mind, you know, with the appropriate amount of gratitude and humility that comes with that territory.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have wind down on my questions, but I said off mic, but I just kind of want to extrapolate further on this for everyone to hear. Like, so part of my whole deal, the reason why I have this, my alias is, When I was in the Army, I started my film creative career. I wrote under a pen name to say things I couldn't say normally. And so throughout the past few years, you know, as I've kind of become this podcast co-host and so forth, my whole deal basically is that I investigate the way we talk about military and propaganda and what that really means or what doesn't mean. And the various media we consume, games, movies, and so forth. So like, you know, people, for example, a recent example, people think when you see something like a Michael Bay's Ambulance, you know, really crazy, wild action movie, but it's saying it has a pretty significant message in it about in this crazy action movie, there's this veteran can't get health care from this government that he sacrificed for because he's going to this crazy robbery movie. So like these things are people, I think we have a part of my whole mission. It's a true kind of enlighten people on what the deeper messages or just the subtler nuances of this media we consume, where it's not all black and white. It's not all like, you know, this is killing brown people kind of get stimulated. There's a lot more to it than that. Yeah. And same with movies as well. Like just because of a show or a movie has a military hero, that's not necessarily by advertisement for the military. Like another example is on the show Reacher. And Amazon Prime, you know, Reacher's a veteran. He's like a man of justice for the people, you know. And so how that interacts. So just that's kind of been my whole mission throughout my career as a film journalist is that try to get to that and expand upon that nuance for a wider audience. So I'll just say I'm happy that like you said, someone like you who recognizes and understands the gravity that is part of these big franchises in this medium. Because, you know, it's not, we don't hear it often. I think we don't hear it often enough that people understand the weight of what they're doing. But at the same time, though, still a question of the joy and enjoyment of having this entertainment and be entertaining. Like, just for me, like the games or the movies, it's not just, it's like a catharsis. I'm able to process what I've seen and lived through. Mm-hmm. Through the films, and that kind of like a exorcism in a way, you know, like through this media. So yeah, I wanted to express to people viewing you or listening now, we're not just here to hype up the games, hype up the movies. There's a lot of weight behind this stuff. So I just want to appreciate that, you know, you being part of that, and you recognize that.
Recognize and I've heard that before. You know, I've heard that before from veterans who. You know, Call of Duty and watching these sorts of movies, it is a way to, as you say, I think you nailed it, you know, catharsis in a lot of ways, and maybe in a strange way to other people, but in a way that's very relevant to them. So, you know, I have heard that before, you know, for people who even just, I was at a con recently and talking with a vet who just had a lot of struggles when he came back home, you know, and he even, you know, sometimes I see them because of the things they've experienced, even the busyness and the sounds and the noise and the convention floor, they have to kind of excuse themselves every once in a while. And I've met a lot of people like that, you know, which is very heartbreaking and very sad and very tragic. And so a lot of times they turn to these movies and the video games and stuff. And it, in a weird way, it does help them kind of, you know, process certain things, you know, and that's a personal, you know, journey and process for each and every one of them. But it is interesting. And I do think that's why you see a lot of, you know, current and former veteran, you know, military do gravitate towards these things. You know, it's what they know, it's who they are. I find that a lot of buddies in the military stay in touch by, you know, firing up Call of Duty and dropping in together and playing everything too, which I just love. That's some of the best part of the Call of Duty thing is that you get to play with your friends. Yeah. And have fun with your friends no matter where they are in the world. And it's yeah. actually helped me stay in better touch with people I grew up with and everything yeah. else too. So I get it. And it's a lot of fun.
Brandon, do you have any other questions for Chad?
I guess I have a very small random one in a second here, but I just wanted to really quick thank you for, you know, a lot of things, you know, but mostly just the fact that you shouted out our Stun Awards so much that I'm doing with Vulture, because like this is such a cobbled together kind of enterprise. And, you know, I was brought on last year by Vulture just because they know that I'm a big action movie head and everything. And last year was insanely difficult because I would email people and they would get back to me and just be like, who the fuck are you? And like now this year it's a nice little back and forth where it's like we're kind of established. But like having, you know, people who are, you know, nominated and worked on the movies and stuff, having you guys shout that out is just it's so cool of you. And it's just been exciting to see your enthusiasm. So thank you for that, first of all. Like it's just,
we're flattered. What great company, man. We were honored, you know. Absolutely.
Well I don't want to go behind the curtain here, but I will say Luna got a ton of support in these awards, so that was very nice to see.
Awesome.
But I guess my only wrap up question here is, you know, you said you're a big fan of the NFL and everything. I'm here in Pittsburgh, so I'm a huge Steeler fan. So I guess if I had to choose, I'm rooting against the 49ers because I don't want another team to tie the only thing that we have to brag about lately. Who are you pulling for anybody tonight? Or are you just excited?
That's a good enough reason as anything. leave our Super Bowl numbers alone.
Exactly.
Listen, I'm a Raiders fan, you know.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
It's all good sense, but I love my Raiders and always have. And, you know, so on one hand, it's like, I can't go Chiefs, you know, it just doesn't feel right. But on the other hand, like, I don't dislike the Chiefs. I love Andy Reid. I think Mahomes is a really special player and really fun to watch. You know, I also know the 49ers have been kind of knocking on the door of this for a while and just can't seem to bring it home. And I love the story of Brock Purdy, you know, the underdog story. Mr. Irrelevant became super relevant in such a short amount of time. So it's one of these teams where I don't have any loyalty or strong dislike of either team. So I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the last football game of the season. And then begins the long depression all the way till next
especially
Euro football games.
Especially because here, you know, we have to unfortunately fill our time with the Pirates, which has been miserable for the last like 25, 30 years.
Okay, so I'm a hockey fan, so I got to interject with Brandon here. You got the Penguins, motherfucker. Like, quit your belly aching. you got maybe the greatest hockey team of all time. Shut up.
It's true. I mean, but I have to say, though, I love your guys' head coach and for the Raiders. I'm really excited to see what you guys do with him because he seems so cool.
I do think after several, you know, swings and potential misses or just circumstances happening where they had to let go of their more recognizable coaches, you know, they and for those, you know, watching at home, you know, the Raiders hired a former NFL player and a hardcore one. And he grew up a hardcore Raiders fan and found their way into a coaching staff. And there were some changes and he got to take over. And, it almost feels militaristic in the way that when somebody in the military has just, you know, a captain or somebody that they're willing to lay it all on the line for them, you know, and that's kind of the quotes coming from these players. It's like, yeah, I'd run through a wall for this guy, you know? And so instead of going out for the fancy, you know, recognizable big name head coaches, they decided to keep it in house and give Antonio Pierce a shot to run the ship. And I'm like, well, they turned it around. Yeah. I mean, they were known for their defense for the first time maybe in 2 decades for the last half of that season since he came on board, which has been their Achilles heel. So anyway, I know it's not a nerd football podcast. So
it is now. Shit. I'm going to keep it short.
The only reason it never is for me is I'm a New York Jets fan. So football hasn't existed for me for, you know, decades.
I grew up in upstate New York, and you know, I feel for the New York teams always. You know, Buffalo Bills are always knocking on the door and can't do it. The Jets just unfortunately are what they are. And even the Giants Mike mentioned race.
Yeah, Mike mentioned hockey. I live like literally a half mile from the New Islanders arena. So I might they're playing the Rangers next Sunday. So maybe I'll do that. I'll be maybe one of my
nothing better than live hockey
somehow, some reason. Yeah.
Nothing better than live hockey.
All right. Well, Chad, I think we've taken, you know, we told you we didn't want to waste your time. We did go long. So hopefully you enjoyed chatting with us. I will say this, you know, anytime you meet an actor that you like, it's always a risky bet, right? There's nothing better than when they turn out to be real fucking cool. And Chad Michael Collins, you are real fucking cool, man.
I appreciate that, man. I mean, look, there's no time wasted here at all, man. It's the gods have smiled upon me and my career is just, I couldn't have drawn it up better on paper, you know, to be in a video game, to be playing a pretend soldier, you know, for a movie franchise. It's like, this is kind of what I set out to do and be perfectly happy doing this forever. And, you know, what I always say to people, you know, just coming from humble beginnings is, you know, I always knew it was more important to be a good person and an okay actor. So, because you know, you can always become a better actor, but you know, it's a lot tougher for people to become better humans. Yeah. So, anyway, I appreciate the kind words and not even a wasted second, let alone a waste of time for me. I love doing this and I hope we can do it all again soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll get you. You have a standing invite next time anytime you want to come back on, especially if you've got something to promote, we'll get you back on. Absolutely. So, we're going to do a little bit of wrap up, but we'll let you go get ready for your Super Bowl festivities. Hopefully you got a good spread today and we'll talk soon, Chad.
Awesome.
Chad, thank you for coming. Right. Thank you for your time.
Michael, nice Brandon, Alec, thank you so much, guys. We'll be seeing you on the X.
All right. Take care, guys.
That went exactly how I expected it to go based on the emails I've had with him. The dude really is just that fucking cool. I don't know what else to say, guys. If you're listening, Chad Michael Collins is just that fucking cool. He's
awesome. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Liam, you missed out, but we understand. Unfortunately, you know, for those listening, I did want to get Chad and Liam into a flex off, but we couldn't do that. I think Liam was actually a little afraid. I think he's ducking this.
He was up late at night last night, DMing me, waking me up saying, can you come on tomorrow? I don't know if I can do this. And I was like, yeah, I guess so. You know,
oh my God. I know, fight for real. We see each other. This would be great.
All right. We are going to wrap up. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this. We sure as hell enjoyed recording it. Brandon, let's start with you. Where can people find you?
Just on Twitter under my name, Instagram, stuff like, I'm not going to steal Vice's whole bit though. So just mostly Twitter. And I want to shout out real quick. I saw, I know we didn't talk about any movies or anything, but I don't know how much this is going to excite fans of this show because it's super art housey bullshit. But there's a movie coming out. I want to say it's going to be hitting VOD in May called She is Conan. And it's a French movie. It's super trippy, super weird, but it's inspired very loosely on Conan and Red Sonja. And there's some pretty cool action moments in it. So yeah, I think if anyone listening, I'm not trying to say that there's no one listening that also doesn't like the dumb art house bullshit that I like, but I know that that's not a huge overlap, but if you want to see something kind of outside the box, something really cool, I think it deserves the support, especially because when it was announced that they were doing a Conan-inspired queer lesbian sort of journey through time movie, there was a lot of backlash that I was seeing on Twitter from like shitty people that are, you know, for all the reasons that you would expect. It had a woman and it was queer in it. So, but yeah, I think it kind of deserves the support. Just keep your eye out for that one. That's what I'll promote instead of my own Twitter. I have nothing to do with the movie, but
your tweets about that got me super fucking hype.
It's bizarre, but I think it's really cool. There's a few action moments in it, but like it's really cool.
We don't get to do it very much, but I know Vice is the same. We do love talking about art house action movies. I fucking love Wong Kar Wai's absolute mess of a movie, Ashes of Time. That's actually my favorite Wong Kar Wai movie, which is sacrilege. But like I we will definitely check it out, and we will try and talk about it when it comes out. Also, pump up the Vulture Stunt Awards.
Oh yeah, Jesus Christ. So voting wrapped this weekend. I shouldn't be saying this, but I don't think they've closed it. Technically, it's closed. I don't think they've officially closed it, though. So if you have the link, I'm talking to you, Aaron Vargas, who DM'd me while we were recording saying, I'm so sorry I didn't vote. You can still vote. Go ahead. So voting is closing this weekend. There's a ton of cool stuff this year tying into it that I'm not allowed to talk about just yet. I told you guys off mic, but there's so much cool stuff happening to coincide with the awards. Are going to be one small part of something bigger this year, but March 4th, I think, is when that's all happening. But we had over 100, I want to say over 120 more voters than we did last year, maybe even more. Like, it's definitely skyrocketed. So appreciate you guys voting. Appreciate anyone who listened, who voted, and just Maxwell Deering, he really, I'm not super active in the Discord. I always feel bad about it, but I'm just really bad with that sort of thing. He was really promoting it in the Discord from what I saw. So just appreciate everyone for taking part of that. Like, it really means a lot to me because it's months and months of hard work and emails.
Yeah, not a lot of satisfaction. A lot of so, it's good that it comes together. I love that you're getting so many more votes this year. That can only help. It's awesome. We obviously, of course, will hype the shit out of it when it drops. As you can expect, we'll get you back on to talk about it too. I mean, that's a given. That's a given. So Vice, where can people find you?
Speaking of indie art action shit, I'm gonna go. You can find me in the movie theater today. I'm gonna go see this. I remember we had a Diego on a little while ago and asked him about this movie, Out of Darkness. It's like a
caveman
horror slasher thing, I don't think, going on. I have very little details about it, but I'm kind of going in half blind. It looks interesting, the concept of caveman, like survival horror. It sounds cool as fuck. So yeah, I'm going to check that out.
It's really cool. Just not to interrupt you, I saw it yesterday. I didn't love it, but it's a really cool little movie. And I just want to say that my little bit on it, since I'm not going to be on next week when you probably talk about it, is for taking place in the Stone Age. These motherfuckers are dressed better than I am. You'll see their clothes in this movie. Like, they look great. They're wearing some cool sweaters and stuff. Like, I don't know, they look really cool. But yeah, it's a cool little movie.
Yeah, because I mentioned this. Oh well, because of the scheduling, we weren't able to talk about this February. People said January movies. Or January's the dumb grounds. No. January was like, this past January was a fucking blast. This February?
It's a bit of a dry zone. I really, and I think that's been that way for a while. February just like, Black Panther blew up in February. Yeah. But February feels much more like the dumping ground that people think January is.
Madam Web next week.
Jesus Christ. I have also that kind of, that horror comedy, Lisa Frankenstein. That's pretty cool. I'm gonna check that out. But yeah, after going from the heights of January with Beekeeper and stuff to like Argyle, Jesus. We might get into that next week or not. Who gives a fuck? But so you can find me on Instagram, looking hot. And you can find me on Advice Victors. And show me Letterboxd at the same. So I have my review of Argyle there, so you can see what I'm talking about. And hopefully y'all review our as well. Whatever else I see. And then as always, so one of us dies. First, I'm gonna get my 10,000 steps in today, so I won't die. Yeah, so one of us dies. I'm on Twitter at Vice Victus talking about this shit.
You can find Liam at Liam Odin on both Twitter and Instagram. As you've heard about, join the A4E Discord, it's a great place. Every time I post something on Twitter, I am constantly reminded, why do I not just talk in the Discord? Why do I not just talk? Yeah, post something on Twitter, get accused of gatekeeping because I didn't put the fucking title of Donnie Yen's Flashpoint in my GIF. talk on the Discord. I don't have to worry about that shit. That shit does not happen. So reach out to me, reach out to Max Deering, and you know, we'll hook you up with an invite. You can find, I also need to plug, Janine Pipe, friend of the show, Janine Pipe, her short, is halfway to funding. We actually helped with that. That is an official A4E sponsored, or not sponsored, but supported short. So go to her Twitter and check it out, you know, or check mine out, cause I've retweeted it a bunch, but help out. Even as little as a $3 can help get them closer. So it's going to be cool when it happens. You can find me on Twitter, unfortunately, at Hibachi Justice. You can find me on every gaming service at Hibachi Justice for the most part. I motherfuckers made me buy Tekken 8, so I've been playing that.
Oh shit, you got it?
Yeah.
I'm not doing it now. Shit. I'm
about yeah, it's real good, man. It's really good. And you can also find the show on all social media at A4E Podcast, linktree.com/A4E Podcast. You're listening to us, so you know you can find us anywhere podcasts can be found. Boys, love you. Let's do this again next week.
Peace.
Later.